blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sanam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By the compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself in the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be a willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
For folks who are new to practice, you're welcome to grab a back chat if you'd like to have that match that you can bear with. Reminder for monks and neighbors that there are quite a few folks in the room who are new to practice and who may not be familiar yet with some of the ways that we express the things that we express in practice. So if you could just keep that in mind when you're sharing about your own experience, that would be lovely. Chris.
So I wanted to let people know that the group this morning is recorded for our monthly donors. Information I don't think that we've gotten out to folks yet. And so we don't know who actually is going to hear what's being said this morning. So
yeah.
If you know someone in the Sangha, you probably don't want to be out there with your process around this other person or something along those lines, because there's a chance that that could be heard. So
thanks, Chris. So this is a chance to talk about whatever you would like to talk about. We look at it in the context of spiritual practice, Deb.
I was thinking this morning that I was thinking about this Bodhi bee. I am born of karma, I am heir to karma, I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Followed by the key, willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. And I was thinking about how true that is, and that you know, whatever I do has consequences. But if I'm willing to have those consequences, then it's no problem, and it doesn't disturb my mind at all. So if you know, if I'm willing to be late, then being late is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm willing to get up really, really early because I want to do certain things, then that's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem that comes is when I'm just not willing. And that includes practice here. If I'm willing to observe when my mind goes to various obsessions or interests or planning or...
Mm-hmm.
That's also no problem, as long as then I bring it back to where I am, so
mm-hmm.
I'm more aware of the things that are going on, and in so doing, there's a calming that happens, and then there's less and less chatter, and then I'm more aware of the sound of the bubbling
water. Yes. It's really neat, because it sounds like you have been watching the process for you and putting it together with those two lines from the Daily Recollection. And what I hear you're seeing is underneath it is the awareness of what's going on. So being willing to accept the consequences of the karma and to continue looking, so that, because one of the things we see when we're looking is how the karma causes us to suffer, and then to have an opportunity to let that go and essentially end that suffering.
Well, I was thinking that the willingness, the karma doesn't necessarily cause the suffering, but the karma is going to be there. Like, it could be suffering to say, okay, I'm going to get up at X time, or it could be suffering to say that I'm late. But if there's willingness in enjoying the karma, or just getting into the karma, then I don't think it's suffering. I don't experience it as suffering if that much willingness is there. For me, it's the resistance to accepting the consequences, or really knowing that there are going to be those consequences and embracing the consequences in that.
Yeah, sort of a whole attitude of acceptance, no matter what, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and seeing that resisting can be one of the areas of suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What else do you see about that? Anything? That really sounds like you're paying attention to the process.
Well, yeah, it just seems like just being a grown-up about stuff. Like, no matter what choice, no matter what happens, there's karma.
Yes.
And you know, if I'm doing X, I'm not doing Y. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can't have both. And you know, to the extent that I haven't settled myself to that, I'm not going to be able to totally forget about myself and get into it.
Just be there doing whatever.
Yeah.
Because there will be a conversation. Yeah. And even that is, there's the conversation.
And then here, as I look at the wall, you know, I get to see what those conversations are, because they're so repetitive.
Isn't that amazing? And nothing new under the sun.
And you know, that's all fine. But even if I'm willing to have those as my current conversations, and I'm willing to know those are there, like, and I'm willing to have them around, then that's also no problem.
Yeah. No suffering.
Yeah.
Very good. It'll be interesting through the week to see how all of that evolves for you. Thank you. Chris?
Her speaking about accepting reminded me of an experience I had this morning when I went to the outdoor shower. Generally, I like a warm shower, a hot shower, actually.
And probably not alone in that.
And I got to the shower this morning, and there were some frogs that, had you not made me aware of this, they would have surprised me. So I said hello to the frogs and started, you know, waiting for the water to get warm, and it didn't. And so I asked the frogs, is this the way it's supposed to be? And they said, yeah. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to get a cold shower here. And you know,
they enjoy it, we know. Yeah.
You know, and it did not bother me. I did not suffer through it, because I acknowledged, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be for me right now.
Yes.
Whether there's supposed to be hot water out there or not isn't
that's not now. Yeah.
And so it was a wonderful experience. So it resonated with me that that it's about accepting what is, and that alleviates the suffering.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to me that it occurred to you to check in with the frogs about it.
But I did.
Yeah. I think it's great. Because there was. I mean, if you were really caught up in, I've got to have a hot shower, I doubt that would have occurred to you. But you were in the moment, there, now, and sort of willing to be there with exactly what was available, and to then wind up having a good time. Yeah, that's good.
I'm looking at something that feels very similar between what I've heard so far, and that is illusion of control.
The illusion of control.
Like, you know, it's like doing everything possible to set it up so that, that, say, the hot shower has hot water all the time. And, you know, every morning checking, you know, everything, even though knowing that there's a brand new, everything's all set. Mm-hmm. There's stuff that happens that just I have no idea about.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do
it's sort of outside our control.
Outside of our control. Like I could do all sorts of stuff to make things go, to get away. But it's like I realize that, you know, even in the it goes back to I don't have control over anything that goes on with me. You know, let alone what's going on out there for a start. And I just go to a place of relaxation listening to, this happens to be what's going through at the moment. Okay, you know, like whole lots of emotions, body experience, thoughts about it. And I have two choices. Essentially,
mm-hmm.
I can either not like what's going on and resist it and try to change
sort
it.
Sort of become somebody about that.
Yeah, become somebody who's going to like have a relationship with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one that I heard about was okay, this is what I've got.
Yeah,
this is what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it like?
What's it like? Yeah.
Because I may never have had an experience of what it is, and all I do is hear a conversation about what it is without actually having the experience.
And how it should be.
Exactly, yeah. How
which
it
is
be.
Completely a fantasy.
Yeah, it's like the shower. I don't know. Like, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, I try to, it's like the old, what's your favorite food, what's your least favorite food, and I asked to try my least favorite food, and it's like, oh, no, yuck. And then all of a sudden I go to it, try it, and it's like, what do I hate about that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
I've just been saying since I was 6 years old that I hate it and I won't eat it.
Right, exactly. And here I am,
yeah.
An adult, and it's like, it's still there, and I try it, and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, over and over and over again, I keep having the experience of, wow, it's really nothing at all, like what the voices and conditioning mind is telling me it's going to be like.
Yeah.
And then they are trying so desperately to get down this narrow track of how it's supposed to be so that it can create suffering.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the end result no matter what.
So that you can kind of be in that, distracted by that, rather than being able to have whatever experience of, hey, this is really okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And besides, if it had all been under control, some spiritual opportunities would have been missed.
Yes. Yeah, true. It's true. We have absolutely no idea that everything that I had not gone through resulted in the fact that I'm here having the experience that I'm having and seeing what it is that I'm seeing.
And appreciating all of it.
Yeah, appreciating all of it. I think if that one attitude of mine could be bottled, I think that there would just be so much more more fun, more joy, and more willingness to say yes to kind of like whatever is going through at the moment, no matter how difficult or hard it can be.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of knowing, staying in that attitude of appreciation.
Yeah, it's like,
no matter
thank
what.
You, this is for me. I may not see the value in it, but
maybe that'll show up.
Maybe that'll show up. Yeah, that, you know, staying with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and as you're pointing at, not believing that Howard Cosell narration that goes on to tell us how it should have been or how it would be if only.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bring up old past records.
Yeah. Yeah. those repeating tapes that really never change.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I can't stop falling asleep in my meditation, and I've had this problem for a while, and I feel like I've tried so many different ways of making it, of getting around it, and it's not because I'm tired. It's like,
sleepiness is you when you sit and face forward, sit and meditate.
I'm sure it's like a form of resistance, going unconscious, but I don't know what to do.
What if you didn't try to do anything for a little while?
I think I would fall asleep.
To sleep. It would be interesting to see. And watch how you fall asleep. Really, really pay attention. How does this work? And see what you can see. What's that sound like? Besides impossible.
I feel like I've done that.
Have you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I've gotten really accustomed to like the body sensations that happen beforehand and during. And
so do you find yourself being somewhat aware as you sleep?
Yeah, except then there's that point where I am not aware anymore, and then I jolt back up like, oh my God, it happened, you know?
Yeah. So you're really conscious for a while, and you're aware that you're falling asleep. And then there's that kind of fall off the cliff that we do. And you wake up and you don't know. You don't know what was in that little transition.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Does that make you a really interesting place? See if you can see what's right there.
Okay.
And report back at some point. So, quiet.
Well, this morning, when it was shared about just, you know, looking at the wall and just seeing the repetitive nature of the thoughts.
Yeah. Talking about getting sleepy.
You know, it just seems as practice goes on, you know, just see it more and more, the repetitive nature of the thoughts at a deeper and deeper level. And
the illusion that they change.
They change.
Begins to fall away.
And just having it pointed out in group recently how boring that whole conversation is, and it really is very boring. And it's just amazing for how long I thought it was interesting. Long I could be just hypnotized into thinking this was kind of interesting.
And that there's really something going on up there.
And that there's really is something going on, and it needs to be noodled incessantly.
Same thought.
Same thought. Just a stuck loop,
yeah.
You know, over and over and over again, and
a stuck loop. Yep.
And so, just really, just really getting again. Oh my God, that is really boring. And what just came through is that, you know, it's like also that part about conditioning, just looking to conditioning to define who I am and, you know, my experience and how long I'm just believing that. And part of that was that I'm boring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just to prove it, I'll pay attention to these same old boring, you know,
yes,
thoughts over and over again. So I've had this practice in the mornings since then of like, instead of going to, oh, well, you know, here's the day, and da-da-da-da-da, to, you know, what I'm committed to, and waking up and, you know, saying, I'm committed to service.
So you wake up, and instead of going into the old familiar repetitive conversation,
right,
you have a commitment to waking up, honoring a commitment you've made.
Yeah.
Or whatever, or right, a series of commitments.
Right. What's just, what's up right now is just really reminding myself, I'm a woman committed to service, you know, and that feels really, really good.
Yeah.
And what that means, and it's just interesting to watch how it just changes the whole tenor.
Well, it sounds like by doing that, you wake up in a conversation that feeds your heart instead of one
absolutely
that takes your energy.
That's exactly, you know, just the heart's just like, oh, yummy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is where we want to go, and this is what we want to support. And
you're having a choice
and
about
having a choice
how your day starts.
Right. And it is that whole thing about, do I want to do the boring thing, or do I want to just go to that place that gives energy and feeds.
The yummy place.
The yummy place, yeah. Feeds the heart. And
yeah.
It's just interesting to watch. But, you know, it's just that, it's the shift of the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and you said that's interesting. It's definitely not boring.
Not boring.
And what makes it interesting, it sounds like, in large part, is that you are kind of watching the process that goes on for you, and you are having an impact mm-hmm. with your intentions.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which is very empowering and,
Yeah.
So, that's it.
Right.
The conversation around acceptance was kind of calling up for me. The conversation around acceptance was kind of calling up for me. The idea that suffering has to happen in opposition to what is so.
Suffering has to happen in opposition to what is so.
So if I'm in a position of acceptance for whatever is going on, then I'm not suffering.
Yes.
It actually brought to mind the story of Jaco and the fox. Old Zen story.
You can tell the story, yeah.
Little abridged version of it. So Jaco is a Zen master, and he's giving a lecture on Zen. And there's an old man in the back of the room that he's never seen before. And after the lecture, the old man comes to speak to him. And he says, I was a Zen master who lived on this mountain many years ago. And a student asked me if the enlightened person is subject to karma. And I said, no, the enlightened person is not subject to karma. And so I've been cursed to be reborn as a fox for 500 lifetimes. And so he says, can you explain this to me? How would you answer that question? And Vidyaka says, the enlightened person is one with the law of karma.
Is one with the law of karma. Mm-hmm.
So
does not avoid karma.
Yeah, so the processes of karma are still operating, but because there's no resistance there, there's just an acceptance of what is so, and the process of suffering disappears. That's kind of how I take the story.
Mm-hmm.
And
suffering ends when resistance to karma ends.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. kind of letting it pass through, and this is what's happening. Okay,
yeah.
Wonderful. I get to see this.
Yeah,
which for me is actually pretty timely. I was having a lot of karma arising yesterday, and just kind of having to struggle with that. Can I just take this as what is happening and be okay with it in this
mm-hmm.
moment, that
mm-hmm.
it is happening?
Not have it be a problem that I am in whatever
mm-hmm.
it is that I'm in that happens, however often.
Not have to take the position that I have to solve this, change this,
mm-hmm.
do something about this, but just actually be with this because it is what is.
Yes. Yeah. And what happened?
I was just in a funk for a while. And then
in a funk for a while?
Okay.
Yeah.
But here I am, I'm clearly in a funk.
Willingness to be in a funk.
Yeah, and just, okay, can I stay right with this and see
mm-hmm.
where this is coming from, what's the history of this, where in me does this arise, and
actual body sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I first feel it?
Yeah, well, layers upon layers. So what
what sensations
are arising in reaction to this? What sensations are actually just being hijacked by this?
Uh-huh.
You know, what's going on with my body that this is then trying to bring into the story?
Mm-hmm.
And just watching, you know, there it goes. You know, I've been out doing this, and that's causing me to be a little sore here or a little tense here. But the story then is coming in that that's because of this and that and the other.
Yeah, which just happens to be a familiar story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's one of those things where it always seems like life is offering whatever you need. So then here we're having this great conversation
mm-hmm.
about acceptance, and
mm-hmm.
I get to go, oh, okay. Yeah, that's that is definitely something to keep in mind should this decide to cycle itself right back on around.
And again, a really important piece of what you're describing is that you were being aware as you went along of what was happening. You were really paying attention. Mickey, I think I saw your name.
I was sort of thinking along the lines of the talking about the person who is just being of service. And there's a part of me who's been someone who pretty much all my life has sort of been searching for, you know, what is my purpose in life and what am I supposed to be doing and what's my what's the grand design for this thing, you know? And actually I read once when I was I took the Myers-Briggs personality assessment thing, and there was this one book that described my type as that their purpose in life is to have a purpose in life.
that's a curious one, isn't it?
It is. And so I think it might have been on last week's radio show or a very recent radio show where someone talked about just how she said it, being herself as full as she could and being there to support others.
And while they learn how to do themselves.
Right. And I just thought, that would be enough. You know, that would be, you know, to just get up every day and be me as much as I can and be there to offer support to others would be fine.
Yes. And do you see how you do that?
I do. Yeah. But, you know, but conditioning would hide that from me because it doesn't look like something necessarily grand and
You're supposed to have a purpose and it's supposed to be
that's right, like change the world, you know?
But
just kind of going about your daily thing and saying yes to things that are offered isn't painted as a purpose.
Right, because it can't move the standards if you're just doing whatever is there in the moment to do. Because it seems like there's such a setup in finding your purpose in life being that huge undertaking that can always be moved very slightly out of reach.
Not even so slightly sometimes.
And I want the Nobel Prize for
this. Right, that's right.
Just to prove I have purpose.
But
instead, just each day, doing what's in front of this person to do.
And what we were talking about too, just the not resisting. You know, this is who I am, and this is what's here for me to do.
Yeah, because the resistance comes from a opposition that something ought to be different than it is.
Yeah.
Well, if it really should be, it would be, but it isn't. So,
And just one other thing, I read this quotation this week that just made me laugh. It was from someone I don't know who it was, but it was along the lines of, "We do have moments that are free from worry. These are moments of panic." And I thought, this person understands my karmic conditioning.
that's really good.
I know. And it just made me laugh because, you know, conditioning, I think, would like to create it so that either it is worry or panic, one or the other.
It
can sometimes tell me that that's actually what my whole life is like. But the fact that I could laugh at that made me recognize that that's not totally true. I mean, that there's a lot of truth in it in terms of my conditioned system, but it's also not true that those are the only kinds of moments that I have.
Yeah, and you were definitely not stuck in it when you found that really funny.
I know it. But I just have remembered that ever since because it just, especially when I'm in one of those moments, I can go back to, worry or panic?
Panic. Maybe I'm going to go back to worry. Jesus, is that a choice? I really.
But I love those. I love those moments when something captures a something that just sort of touches a place that bring some of the awareness into life that have been kind of...
Turns the lights on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 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 Let's see. Yes, Diane.
I've been here for less than 24 hours, and I've been experiencing two things that I'm noticing, and that's, one, an extreme peace of being here and just loving this place. And being in the group, but also loving that I have a hermitage and I can just be by myself and not putting on an act for anyone, which is what my life has mainly been. But what I'm finding myself, along with this peace and love of being here, what my mind keeps going to is, gosh, you know, I might only have 25 or 30 years left of life, and I'm going to leave this place, and I'm just afraid I'm going to go back into that old life. It's scary. The shoulds in me keep saying, oh, you should be enjoying this now, and all you're doing is worrying. You're worrying about when you're not here.
And do sometimes those voices sound familiar? The one that's saying you should be enjoying yourself and 25 or 30 years if that's all I have left of life.
Yeah.
And then there's the feeling of peace when you are here in group or your hermitage.
Right, when I'm just sitting there on my bed folding my clothes, I'm just so aware of just folding them. Just the act of folding them instead of getting the laundry basket, throwing them together, get them in the drawer just as fast as I can so I got something else to do. You know, and that's so peaceful.
Nice. Instead of getting over it, over with it, you're being with it in a way that sounds like it's really, nourishing might be a word that comes to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just really serves you in a way that all of the... Well, if you've only got this much time, you better get with it.
Yeah.
Or hurry up and get peaceful.
Or the person I live might think I'm just taking too much time because there's so much to do and I'm supposed to do this, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost more of a pressure that I've always felt from the outside than within. So I'm learning when I don't have those outside pressures, it's just so peaceful.
What might be available and how to avail yourself of that wherever you are, which is something we'll be looking at through the week. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Penny? I was really struck by that, getting up in the morning and saying I'm a person of service or whatever one says, and just how helpful that, what I heard as I heard that was what a powerful statement. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a powerful way to enter the world. As opposed to, oh my God, I've got this to do and that to do, and you know, and so I was finding how helpful that would be because what I tend to wake up into is starting to review the things I want to do, and often there are things I really want to do. Mm-hmm. You know? But there's a difference between kind of saying, "Oh, neat! You know, I've got all this to do today." And the difference between, "Oh, I've got to do this and this and this and this and this," I'll probably never get it done. And so it's the difference between whether it's being presented to me by conditioning as the list or the, "Oh my God, this is there to do," mm-hmm. or whether I claim it from my desire to do it.
You choose it.
I choose it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just was really appreciating that difference.
So such a huge difference in whether you wake up and it's something you choose or something that sounds like it could be habitual and just starts on its own in a way.
Yeah, something that's kind of presented to me, the guise is it's all desirable. The undercurrent is it's all got to be done.
Yeah.
And so, mm-hmm. but even just to wake up into... Well, I'm a project person. I love projects, and I have a whole day to do things
just
I want to do.
Projects.
What a different place that would be than to start reviewing what all those things would be.
Yes.
And the other thing I was thinking that would be another place I see that would be helpful is that several mornings a week I get up really well from what I feel is really early. I think 5 o'clock is really early. So anyway, I get up at 5 o'clock in order to do the various things that are done in our household in the morning in order to get to a class at the gym. And I'm always bad by the time I get there, you know, that I've done it. But I often wake up into, when the alarm goes off, into, oh, I hate these 5 o'clock mornings.
Yeah.
And how different it would be to wake up into, I'm a person who really takes care of my body.
And is willing to do some
whatever
moderately extreme things, and it may not be so moderate.
It doesn't feel moderate.
Right, yeah. I didn't realize as I said that.
But yeah, I mean, what a different place it would be to wake up into my claiming of why it is I do these things and how this is for me.
Yes.
Rather than, and almost how this is being inflicted upon me.
Yeah. It's interesting how that I hate this can become a sort of a trigger to go into, oh no, I don't.
I can use it. You mean?
When I hear myself say I hate this, it there can be a habitual I hate hot weather.
Uh-huh.
But actually, my experience of hot weather is that it's not bad at all.
Well,
or I could say I hate cold showers.
Yeah, it gets to be just a habitual thing that I say when the alarm goes off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and instead to have that choice of, wow, you get to take care of the body today.
Yeah, and to use the habitual thought of, oh, I hate this, as a flag to bring you back to, oh, no, wait, what I say now is...
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Thanks for reminding me that I'm up because I want to take care of this person.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Kim?
I've been watching that, too, in terms of how the things that I actually literally choose to do, I can be victimized by them, by the conversation.
Oh.
So if I say, oh my God, you know, I've got this project it's gonna take so long, it's gonna be so hard, and I've actually laid it out, I've chosen to do it, it's not anything that anybody is making me do. Suddenly I'm a victim to this thing that actually I've chosen.
It's gotten turned into a source of suffering.
Yeah, so if I do exactly what folks in the room have said and actually acknowledge the choice, and it's empowering. The choice then becomes something that is empowering rather than turns me into a victim to it.
Yeah, so feeling empowered by it rather than victimized because this is something...
Yeah.
However, it's been turned into something unpleasant.
Well, it's
really something that you choose and you want to do.
Right. I've been working on that distinction with a project that I have been doing for almost completely 2 weekends, which I thought would take me one afternoon.
There's an illusion of control.
And... you know, I watch sometimes, especially when I kind of get tired and the mosquitoes are eating me to death, I'm kind of like, gosh, this is just taking way longer than it should, you know. And then suddenly, you know, it becomes a whole different experience, and then I just move my attention to just doing the next thing, you know, and I spent 12 hours at it yesterday, and it's lovely.
Yes, turning problem to project to problem.
So it's really, there's a significant difference of experience just in where the focus of the attention is, basically.
Yeah, it's reminding me of seeing so often folks get into this thing, creative thing I really want to do, or I really want to go to the gym, or I really want to, and I get into it, and then something slithers in that starts saying, well, you've got to. You know, you really should. You better not miss it. You know what turns it into something unpleasant instead of letting it be with the inspiration that started it.
Yeah, and it's just, it's amazing because it's an empowering choice that turns into something that is so victimizing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that is just really... quite a disparate two different experiences.
Yeah, and when you become aware of it, you begin to have a choice.
Absolutely.
That you're experiencing.
Yeah, and noticing that that's what that kind of conversation actually that's where that conversation leads to.
Yeah.
If I indulge it,
mm-hmm.
that's where it's going. And then, like you say, I can say, oh, there goes that one again. I'm not going there.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I think I'll keep having fun.
Yes. I was noticing something about choice also when I was meditating, which was my first time facing the wall during meditation today.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that happens to me sometimes when I meditate, and also in other times in my life, I just start crying. And I think my conditioning tells me that I'm sad, but I think when I question it, it's not really sadness. I'm having the sensation of tears coming out of my eyes and my throat getting closed up and mm-hmm. some sort of welling of something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just letting go and what it feels like to really be in the moment and not overwhelming the feeling that I usually keep out by having voices and busying myself with things that when I finally let it in, it's kind of big.
Yeah, it's kind of big. And it's so neat that you are able to see it and have those awarenesses and not be getting caught in, well, it's sad. What am I sad about? And then I go through a little review of, but instead, and the way Sherry put it once, I just absolutely love, which is heart opens, tears come.
I really resonate with that. There's sort of a sadness. It's like a bittersweet sadness, but it's more like a sadness that I don't have it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that my heart isn't open all the time.
Yeah, sure. At the same time you're having the experience, you are being aware of how you miss it when it's not there.
Awesome.
I think what you're saying. Yeah, it's quite lovely.
And to just surrender to it and just let it happen and not feel like I have to hide it or control it or put a story to it.
Don't have to hide it down. Yeah. Anything more? Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. I can actually resonate with that one too. I have lots of experience with the heart open, tears kind of situation. And I remember sitting in the hall and just going, this is going to look a little strange.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to turn around and bow and walk out of here and look like a zombie. And you know, it's this story of what does that mean? Obviously, my conditioning as a guy is, this is not acceptable at all.
Uh-huh. Boys don't cry.
Well, you know, at the very least, boys don't cry in public. You go to that somewhere where nobody can see you. And just seeing how many different stories can arise from that same experience. You know, just over that one didn't work. Well, next time we'll get in with this one.
Yeah.
That one didn't work. Well, next time we'll get in with this one.
Yeah. And the heart keeps opening and the tears keep coming.
Yeah. And just how every little nook and cranny of the sensations of that gets woven into different stories and whatnot, and just over and over and over again, here's the experience.
Yeah. Anything to keep you from just having that experience, from just being open to life.
But again and again, life just keeps offering the experience. Just okay. Mm-hmm. Here's another opportunity to see what this, see this for what it is.
Yes. Yeah. It's neat, isn't it? Yeah.
Go ahead. I wanted to share a couple of my experiences. One immediate experience from this morning meditation. I found myself as if I'm driving. Car was very loose steering and. So when you keep it in the right, it means no cuts, but it creeps to the left and you start to analyze past events, what has been done, what has been done right, wrong. Then you steer it to the middle and then it wanders to the future, so planning events and stuff like that. And as I was meditating, trying to sort of keep it in the middle, and gradually I was started to hold a bit more in control of the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And another experience this morning, between breakfast time and meditation, I was sitting in the trailer and I was thinking, well, I must do something, so what? I was just sitting still.
You're just sitting there in your hermitage and all of a sudden, I must do something.
Yes, and probably first time I was like, do I have to? Do I need to? Can I just sit and enjoy what I'm doing right now and doing nothing?
Yeah, and you suspect that's the first time that's ever happened.
Probably.
Did you question that?
My next question was when it happened that I was sort of not too worried about things that happen around me, having this kind of relaxed lifestyle, and then jumping on that train of obligations, sort of, starting to think in terms of achievements and analyzing your own performance. And problem that was this train, so you have to run all the time, so it's a kind of you're not on the train, but you're next to the train, so always need to catch it up, and maybe it's time to jump off it. And
which it sounds like you did this morning.
I hope so. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what I experienced.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, it's something like that where it was towards the end of my day. It says yesterday or it was the day before, and I just realized I've had it. It was I've reached the end of my rope with today. I'm ready.
And the day wasn't quite over.
Well, I was finishing a long walk, and it was late in the evening.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, but I could have been doing anything. And just, I've reached the end of my rope. And realized, oh, this point comes and goes, and I keep going. And that's the way it's always been.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, in the past, it's always been, and I shouldn't keep going because I'm going to be tired tomorrow. And there was a little subtle difference here, which was, it's not about tomorrow, it's about today. I've reached the end of my rope today.
Mm-hmm.
So usually I just kind of miss that, and I'm looking at the fact that, oh, I'm messing myself up for tomorrow, and it's like, oh, wait a second. It's not so much about tomorrow, it's about today.
Since tomorrow, I really today. Have no idea how
we,
I'm going to
yeah,
feel.
Maybe I won't be live tomorrow. And so,
maybe not.
Yeah, so it's like I reached the end of my rope today, so
that's
a reason
mean,
to
Michael?
Stop. Well, what I saw.
The end of your rope.
Well, it was just this. That's a good question, too, because really when I saw that, it's like someone inside me had reached the end of his rope.
Yeah.
It was like, well, now I can kind of be a grown up for the rest of the day.
Uh-huh.
And do what I need to do. And
so that was, in a way, one perspective on the day, but it wasn't necessarily the perspective that you always feel, or you said. Often you will just keep on doing whatever,
right.
And lo and behold, the rope has still got some play. Or however we do that.
Well, yeah, there's the possibility to take care of myself.
Yeah.
As opposed to completely missing that.
Yes.
And, you know, what...
Yes.
In some way or another, not taking care of myself.
Yeah. So hearing that maybe that saying something about, maybe my feet hurt, or maybe it's time to sit down and have a glass of water, or maybe...
Yeah.
But it's telling you, it's a little signal, hey, we need some attention in this area.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of how it...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just nice to to see that. So now, so kind of it. I responded to it. There was a way in which I could respond to what's actually going on, which could look any number of ways.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, that either I react to it in some way, and mm-hmm. you know, I hate life,
mm-hmm.
or I ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just walk through it instead of. It sounds like really, in a way, hearing something in it that you've never heard before.
Yeah. That'd be about right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Final thing.
Great.
I think that's it. Yeah.
I'm reminded of a lyric from a song. Lay down your burden and I will carry you. And hearing this statement, I'm at the end of my rope today, brings up similar stories within myself,
mm-hmm.
Of, you know, I've had enough, I can't do this, you know, I want to be loved, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that phrase, which from my upbringing, from my history, was always an external voice. Lay down your burden and I will carry you. It can be internal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when that voice says, I can't do this, I'm tired, I want to be loved,
mm-hmm.
then I have the choice to say, I'll carry you. I love you, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you out.
Yeah.
Let's stop. Let's sit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever it is that my child is saying that needs to be done.
Yeah.
I can hold that child. I can carry that child.
Mm-hmm. And what's that like for you when you are able to be there for yourself in that way?
It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. It's incredibly healing. And it's something that I have for nearly 40 years denied myself the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always felt that it was someone else's
yeah.
out there responsibility
mm-hmm.
to carry my burden.
Yeah. Which is kind of the parent-child setup from
yeah.
the get-go in a way.
And to recognize that it's okay to feel anything that I feel, but that it's also completely appropriate to say, I can be with you in that.
Yeah,
feeling.
Yeah, I can carry you while you're going through this. Or, yeah. Yeah. That's nice. Thanks.
I think it's such a helpful conversation about doing things versus getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
Just the two places that those come from in me, and I think when I'm trying to get things done, I'm really, I think I might actually be identified with, like, being separate. Like, trying to get somewhere so that then I'll be loved. Because
uh-huh.
I'm not loved.
Yeah.
So I'm not loved, so I'm just getting this shit done.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So having a goal and feeling like you have to work so hard to get to do
and then
that
some place
goal.
To get, and then I'll, I mean, the bottom line is then I'll feel loved or be loved.
Yeah.
I think it always seems to come down to some form of that.
Uh-huh.
And then there's mm-hmm. actually doing things from a place of love, that I am loved and I love. And
then you have that thing that.
And then there,
yeah.
we live in the world and there's a lot of things to do to maintain life.
Yeah.
So, and how easily I can go, well, I was going to say from one to back and forth, but really it's more from one to, it's more easier to go in one direction than the other.
Say more about that.
Well, it's much easier to go to get the stuff done angle than to be in the camp of being present and
yeah.
experiencing life
yeah.
and love. And these are the things that are part of my life.
As usual, it's so much easier to do what's habitual than
yes.
what really works.
Yeah, and I never thought of it before this conversation of that when I'm in that mindset of get these things done,
mm-hmm.
that could actually be a flag to get my attention to see that I'm identified with some separate belief.
Yeah, that you're striving for something that it actually isn't possible to get.
Right, that I'm keeping myself from having right this minute.
Yes, keeping yourself from having right this minute. That experience of being in love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm having a bit of a problem with the mindful eating.
Having a problem with mindful eating, okay. What's that look like?
At home, I generally tend to just nibble all day long unless I eat socially, and in a social environment, I tend to eat more. So I start trying to do the mindful eating, and I put down my fork, and then I get bored. Like, I don't want to eat anymore. I'm like, okay, I'm done. And like, I kind of keep like force myself to eat, and then it just becomes a chore, and I'm like, okay, I'm really done.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't want to eat anymore. Unless I eat really fast. You know what I mean? I don't know.
It sounds like there's some, you're actually kind of challenging yourself with the mindful eating sign suggests you put your fork down between bites.
Yeah.
And you put your fork down, and what comes up is, oh, Lordy, I'm bored.
Well, I eat enough, like I'll eat like half the plate and then I'll be satiated, and then I feel like I should keep eating because I serve myself, but then I'm bored already, you know, like I'm done eating.
Uh-huh.
And does that make sense?
Eating
really
isn't fun anymore. You don't want to eat. So is it that you may take more on that first serving than you really want to eat? Well, that's not
because
it.
I don't tend to eat three meals a day, so I'm trying to get enough nutrition,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
I know I need to eat, but I don't eat this way.
But somehow if you eat fast, you can get through it all.
Right.
something about this.
Unless I'm eating socially, then I can eat. I don't know if that makes sense.
Socially being when you're having conversations
right.
and not thinking about what
eat,
you're eating. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
I can eat more, but otherwise.
Yeah.
At home I'll just have like a tiny piece of bread and then like an hour later I'll have a banana. And so I just graze all day long, so it's just a teeny bit of food. And so I sit down and I grab enough that I need this nutrition. But I start eating and I get satiated and I'm like, okay, I'm done. But I know I need to keep eating because,
mm-hmm.
you know, there isn't going to be food until...
Mm-hmm. And is this something that's being available to you now in a new way because we eat and we don't get social and we don't... Yeah. So it's going to be an exciting week. Because it sounds like you're really seeing a lot that's related to you and food and sort of the speed at which you eat and how much you eat. And what is boredom, exactly?
Are you asking me?
It could be a place to look. Do you have a sense of it?
No, but I want to move on to something else.
Move on, sort of a restlessness. That may not be it.
Maybe.
But it is, it's very much in line with what we're doing here and what we're doing this week in terms of bringing awareness to all of the things that when we're at home, we don't get to see because we're not shown in the same way. We can't see. If I'm sitting there and having, you know, six people over for dinner, I really have not that much awareness of what's going on with me in relation to my food, but if I'm sitting here in the dining room where nobody's talking, and I'm even pausing between bites, which is new, I get to see all kinds of stuff about my relationship with food and how that works, which could be helpful in the long run. Maybe. Thank you. 1 more minute. Yes.
I'm also having an issue with food in that I'm realizing that I don't think I like eating as much as I've always thought that I did.
Wow. That's quite a discovery, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think it's because I'm not distracted by other things.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I really like is just going unconscious, sort of. Do you know what I mean? I always eat, and that comes along with watching TV, talking to somebody, doing something else, not paying attention.
Yeah.
But when I'm eating this food, I'm like, I am not loving this process nearly as much as I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't want to let go. I don't want to accept that, because then what do I have to look forward to throughout my day?
Wow.
And then I'm like, wow, yeah. You're thinking that, you're really messed up.
Boy.
It's just a really, yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing what you're doing, and there's a lot of judgments and opinions going along with what you're doing.
And I like the food more when the judgments are going, just by the way.
Keep watching that. In terms of, is it, and it may be that you actually are liking it more, or is it, as we were saying earlier, that it's something that's habitual and so it feels more comfortable?
Also, and then I'm starting to wonder, or the voices are starting to wonder, if you feel that way about food, then how do you, what about everything else in your life? Like, do you really love the people that you think that you love?
So kind of a conversation that wants to come in and have you question your life.
Yeah.
Is that familiar?
Yeah, well, it's been since I started this practice.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
And it's really, it may not feel this way, but it's really great that you see it. And stay tuned, because there's going to be a lot more this week in terms of ways of looking at that and, yeah, just different angles on it. So it's super to be catching on to that. Thank you all.